Welcome to the Time We Have podcast, presented to you by Motor Neuron Disease, New South Wales. MND New South Wales acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land we live on. We pay our respects to all elders, past and present, of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations.
I didn't really come to terms with the fact that I was a young carer until I realised I had to start reorganising my priorities in life.
Hello and a very warm welcome to the MND New South Wales podcast, The Time We Have. My name is Sabine Krajewski and my guest today is Lauren Alzamora. Lauren is a young university student in her first year, and she's also a young carer who's looking after her dad, Carlos. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning, Sabine. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Where are you? Are you at home at the moment?
Yeah, I'm just in my room. I've got my cat here with me.
Where is it? I can't see your cat.
Oh, he's on the floor. He's
it's okay. Don't pick it up. I have mine here as well, and they don't want to be picked up either. But yeah, that's yeah. Awesome. So where is home? Where's your room?
So it is on the second story of my house. I live in Fairfield, Cabramatta area, and with my mom, dad, and my sister, and four cats.
Okay. And I said you're a young university student, and you actually are, because you just turned 18, but you're already at uni at UTS. What are you studying?
I'm studying a Bachelor of Animation Production in my first year. So I just finished my first semester and I'm honestly loving it so much. I finished high school last year at the age of 17. So I just turned 18 like last month. Yeah.
Pretty good. So you didn't want to take a break?
Nah.
That's pretty good. You said you were in the area Cabramatta Fairfield, and that's where you grew up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've lived in this house my whole life.
Yeah, okay. Your whole life, which is not that long, actually.
No.
But yeah, so can you draw us in a little bit? Like, what was your childhood like and your family life?
Well,
how was it growing up?
Yeah, well, my area is a pretty interesting one, I'd say, because there's a very unique culture to it. Like, it's made up of a lot of different immigrant populations. So growing up, I mean, I'm a child of immigrants myself, so it's honestly very nice to call this place home. You know, you never feel very alone here. There's always people who you can hang out with, and it's a really good culture. Yeah, so like growing up here was pretty, it was very quiet, honestly. I mean, it's just a small suburb in the Western Sydney. So
yeah.
And I mean, going to primary school and high school and all of that.
Yeah.
Again, you've got a really big immigrant population. And so a lot of my friends, like getting to know them, and it also made me, I think, like a bit of an open-minded person. Just, yeah, I don't know. It's a really good place to grow up, I think. But now going into the city and going to uni, you know, it's a real big eye-opener that, wow, there's a whole world. You know, I've always lived in this small area, so
yeah you had the big world in the small area. Did you get to go to the beach a lot?
No.
Not so much. I was just wondering, because usually people who live closer to the beach are there all the time. And
so like the common archetype of, you know, coastal Aussie going to the beach every Sunday. Last time I went to the beach was well over like 4 years ago. So
oh my goodness. Okay.
No, I'm actually scared of the ocean.
Okay. Too much sand between your toes.
Yeah.
Okay. You already mentioned what you're studying, and I think you told me when we spoke before that your whole family seems to have a lot of talent in the arts. Can you tell us a bit about your family and what they do?
Yeah. So my dad, he's the one who's like the original talented artist, I guess you could say, in our family. He's working as a graphic designer by profession. But I reckon if he had the chance, he would have been, you know, one of those great fine artists. But hey, coming from Peru, he didn't really have that much of a opportunity in that regard. My mom, she's a registered nurse. So when they met here in Australia, they obviously had me and my sister. And my sister's now in her first year as a secondary high school teacher, teaching visual arts. And then I'm now studying animation. So yeah, I guess I've inherited that talent, but he really is the original, and he likes to. And he's the one who has taught me since I was little everything that I know now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you told me that your mom at first wasn't so thrilled that you were going to do something arty.
No. Well, she was one of those parents who always encouraged you, like, be whatever you want to be when you grow up. as long as you, you know, you have a secure income. I guess arts aren't really the most secure of an income, but hey, it's fine. I guess animation is probably one of the most secure jobs you can get. And look, I'll try my best. I always do in that regard. And yeah, whatever will be, will be.
It's a good attitude to have.
You never know what's around the corner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much we don't know yet, right?
Yeah, I try not to worry too much about the future, yeah. But hey, again, whatever will be, will be. I'm fine. Yeah.
Your talent's already been recognized.
We got in touch via the design contest that MED New South Wales had for the Young Carers, which you won, right?
Yeah.
I'll ask you about that again a little bit later. But yeah. you mentioned that your father is from Peru. Can you talk a bit more?
Yeah.
That sounds really interesting how you came here. And
yeah, well, mm-hmm. Peru, as you'll probably know, is like a third world country in South America. It's just next to Chile and Colombia and all of that. It's quite a interesting place to, because I've been there before. I went there in 2016 just to visit my family. My dad is the youngest of seven siblings. Mm-hmm. And so there's like a 20-year age gap between him and my oldest tia. And it's really just, it's so rich with culture. Like, sure, he grew up in like the more lower socioeconomic areas of Peru. So Matute is like quite a poor area, mm-hmm. But not very poor, like in a scheme, like relative to the rest of Peru. So he didn't actually, there wasn't a lot of opportunity there. That's why he and a lot of his siblings moved to Canada and Australia. But I visited there and it's really just so, so beautiful. Just the people there, like it's incredible. Yeah, so he moved here when he was in his 20s and he met my mom on a train. So there's a whole love story behind that and it's really beautiful. Yeah. And so he couldn't speak English very well and he came here. Now, growing up, I didn't even realize he had an accent. Like he's really adapted to life in Australia and he says he'd call himself Australian before Peruvian.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like especially coming from like a mixed heritage, I consider myself to be like an Australian born to like two really beautiful distinct cultures. And mm-hmm, yeah, it's a real privilege, honestly.
You're a third culture kid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you speak Spanish?
A little bit of Spanish, a little bit of Serbian here and there, but
yeah,
just I speak French more than anything.
Fantastic. Very interesting. Who wants to go to the beach if you can go to Peru?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I would choose Peru any day. The traffic is horrid and that's what I love about it.
That's amazing. Tell me more about your dad, Carlos. What's he like? What's your relationship like? Who is he as a person?
Oh, he's a funny, funny man. He's got the most killer sense of humor you've ever met. Possibly dark sense of humor, but hey, that's his charm. And like he's more of my best friend than anything because we share, like, I don't know how, but I inherited a lot of his interests.
Mm-hmm.
So even like caring for him on a day-to-day basis, it ends up being really fun because, you know, I get to hang out with him and we end up just watching a whole lot of Planet of the Apes movies a lot of the time. And it's great because we share a lot of the same interests. And if I have an issue with an art project, I go to him for advice. And of course, and he absolutely tears my art to shreds. He gives me the most ruthless criticism, and that's what I love him for, that, you know. But yeah, he's really just such an amazing person, and especially after his diagnosis and all that, I feel like it would have been a lot harder to cope with the reality of it all. So I just saw your cat in the corner. It's so cute.
Oh yes.
But yeah, but yeah, it would have been a lot harder to cope with the reality of it all had he not had that sense of humor and had he not tried to, that's the thing, he's also a very selfless person and he really tried to make the reality of like our new reality of his condition a lot easier for everyone to cope with, whether it be through popping jokes or really having like honest conversations, because that's one thing as well, communication is very important in situations like these.
Yeah.
So him initiating that was like such a crucial part of our whole family coming to the acceptance of what is happening and really relying on each other in regards to coping with it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but yeah, he's a really fun person. That's him.
Did you or anyone in your family know anything about motor neuron disease? Maybe mom, because she's a nurse.
Yeah, well, I have no doubt she might have encountered it at some point in her like 20-year-long career, but no one really knew anything about it. I mean, actually, a few years ago, my dad did the ice bucket challenge.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he did the ice bucket challenge, and at the time, it was more of like an internet trend. Like, honestly, more people were doing it because their friends had tagged them than actually knowing anything about ALS or motor neuron disease. So
Yeah.
it was only after he got diagnosed did we really go, wait a minute. I think we did a fundraiser for this like years ago. It's honest that that's actually kind of sad now thinking back on it, that a lot of people just didn't even know what they were raising money for. A lot of people just did it because it was a fun trend, but
They just wanted to have an ice bucket over them. Okay, yeah, that's a weird way of having fun, but yeah.
Yeah, they just wanted that cooling, refreshing shower, you know?
Yeah, just a bit of unconscious fundraising.
So we actually had no idea, and it was I didn't even know that he got diagnosed for a few weeks, because
Okay, yeah.
they said that he had some condition, he had some neurological condition, but I actually had no idea until it popped up in a conversation, and I was like, wait a minute, he has motor neuron disease? I didn't even know this.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, so it was, and then a big thing that my parents also told us when after he was diagnosed was, don't look it up. Only trust what we tell you, don't look it up. And then what did we do? We looked it up, and sure enough, we had the whole, oh, life expectancy is 6 years and all of that. So it's really like it was very confronting after we looked it up and we had to really do our research about the whole thing because, yeah, we had no idea what the condition was prior to him getting diagnosed. Yeah, it
When
was
was he diagnosed?
July last year. So it was about a year now, exactly a year since he got diagnosed.
And it is ALS.
Yeah. It's a very slow progressing ALS, but it's still ALS.
Okay. Yeah. I mentioned before that we got in touch because of the design contest that we had, right, for young carers, and your design won. And by the way, it will be on a poster that our students who we have on placement, they made it for the National Carer Conference in Melbourne.
Oh,
So
cool.
it features your design in the middle of it. So I'll send
Oh.
you to see. It's
Oh,
it looks
yes,
really good.
please. Oh my
It's going to
goodness.
be on everything Youth Hub, right? It's a poster about the Youth Hub. But yeah. So your design has won, but there was also a story that you sent with it as an email, and it was a very, just a few clear sentences, but it was a beautiful message. Can you tell more about your coffee ritual with your dad, what it means to you and your father?
If I'm being honest, it's not actually a coffee ritual so much as it is a breakfast ritual because I don't drink coffee.
Okay.
I don't enjoy coffee.
I do. I can't wake up without it.
He does, so I occasionally make coffee for him. But really, it was when trying to come up with a design that would represent the experiences of youth carers, which is so difficult because there's so many different experiences, like depending on whether your patient is high care or low care and all of that. I really just wanted to go down to basics and think, what is the bare minimum that I do for my dad every single day, regardless of if I'm going to be really busy, if I'm going to uni, or if I have work that day? What's the one thing I always do? And that is, I always make sure he has breakfast because, my mum's a shift worker. She has to sleep in, and my sister goes to work first thing. So my dad and I, we just have the morning together, and it's our little ritual that I make us breakfast. Often he has oatmeal on cold days. So I mix the supplement powder into it and I sit down with him. We both have bowls of oatmeal and we just catch up. Even if we've only like we did it literally yesterday, but we catch up on the past day, you know? But yeah, it's really so precious to me, that little moment in the morning that, before you do anything, before you even think about getting ready or before you think about, whether he's feeling okay today, whether I need to be extra like careful with him today and I need to like give him massages or all of that. It's a moment before the day starts that you can really just spend with whoever you're talking, like whoever you're taking care of. In this case, my dad. It's a moment that I spend with him, like as a person, not caring for him as a person with MND,
As
just
your
with
dad.
him as a person, as my dad, as my best friend. That's the significance it held for me. And so I kind of illustrated my design with that in mind, thinking, well, hopefully a number of young carers also share the same sentiment. But yeah,
Have
that's
you had that ritual before he was
honestly not as
diagnosed, or
much. Not as much, no, because normally before he was diagnosed, he would make breakfast for himself and we'd kind of have our own separate
That's what
lives.
you
Like I would be going to school and he'd be at work all day at home. It wasn't a very big thing. Even like during school, I'd often skip breakfast. But now that especially like health is very important to us, keeping maintaining your health, and he needs to eat every single meal. He can't be skipping anything. So preparing his meals is a big part of and like then eating them together to make sure we're both eating and we're both like just spending time together as well. I think it's very important.
Yeah,
so that's something that's really only been very recent, but it's one of the very few benefits we've gotten out of his condition, just that time we spend together.
Yeah, that's a very precious ritual that you have there. So maybe the design of the cup is, there's no coffee in it, but it's an oatmeal thing, or what is
Yeah, it's oatmeal, could that's it. It could be anything.
I think I saw coffee in it because that's my morning ritual, so you see how people are influenced by their own.
Yeah, it's a self-insert. You can put whatever you want to have for breakfast in
it. Which is good, because for young carers, we also have very young carers, and they probably do not drink coffee yet, hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully. Caffeine at that age, nuh-uh.
So it's already clear what from what you said and what you explained that you have a close relationship with your father. What other kinds of things are you doing to support him?
It's interesting because it's not just like physical support in terms of helping him with his disability. It's often more like emotional support as well. And you don't realize how much care goes into taking care of someone with Meningeal disease, or just someone, anyone with a disability, until you actually have to do it. And it was very hard at first, like trying to accommodate a lot of his needs, because a lot of it you don't even think about. Like, say you open the door for him and then you let him walk in by himself. Like, say if he's returning from an appointment, you let him walk in and you just leave him. But no, he has to take off his shoes, he has to take off his jacket, he has to close the door. A lot of that takes a lot of physical strength. And if he exerts that strength, it ends up hurting him later because his muscles are so fatigued. Every little thing you need to consider when you're taking care of someone. And it's something that's taken a few months, but like now I can say I'm like pretty like in sync. And every time I hear him walking around and his footsteps maybe are a bit heavier because he's struggling, I immediately let go, and I listen for that, and then I go and find him and help him wherever he is. Like, a lot of that you really need to be in sync with. And in addition to all of the typical like carer things that you have to do, a lot of that also needs emotional support, because like I'm a very big advocate that everyone should be seeking therapy, and especially with a diagnosis like this, like you need emotional support in that regard. Even like between psychologist sessions, I think just having someone that you can talk to and really voice your frustrations for that day, like, oh, my hands aren't working properly and I can't work as effectively today, like that's another burden on him, because like if he can't work, then he can't provide for our family, and then that's taking away another one of the roles, that like one of the many roles that have already been taken away from him because of his illness. It's a really big responsibility, I think, but after time you really grow accustomed to caring for someone and like really anticipating their every need and frustration, and trying to manage that as well as your own and the rest of the family as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I haven't heard anyone describe the seemingly small things and the need to be in sync as well as you have done that. And you have an amazing ability to look at things from different perspectives and to slip into your father's and your family members' shoes.
There are many young carers out there like yourself, and they're very often overlooked there, or they don't see themselves as carers. But when I talked to you, I noted that you were well aware of your changing role and that you are a carer. So what is it like for you? How do you feel about being a young carer and taking on this role, which is also a role that grows over time? You know, you're a uni student, which is usually the time where everyone is carefree and starting something new and hanging out with people and so on. So how do you combine those roles?
Well, that's actually a really, really good question, because it's one that I've had to like answer myself and deal with myself all this time. And whenever I tried speaking to my friends about it, going, you know, I'm suddenly having these changing responsibilities and I have to reorganize my priorities in life, I don't really get it. Like, it's a quite isolating experience, because it's something that really only young carers are familiar with, or like other people sharing that same, like a similar role. It was very difficult at first because it felt so overwhelming. Like, I had just finished my HSC. My dad's condition is starting to noticeably deteriorate.
Yeah.
And I'm suddenly faced with like, oh, say I want to study animation. I need to get a job in an animation studio. That means I have to live in the city. In order to live in the city, I'd have to live away from home. And if I am to live away from home, that would mean leaving my dad alone.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then wasting time that I could have potentially been spending with him. I was faced a lot of questions. Should I be deferring my studies to spend more time with him? Should I get a part-time job to fund my own public transport so I can make my way to uni? at that time spent at the job could have been sort of my dad. Like, it was a very, very difficult conclusion for me to come to at the end of the day.
Deadly. Yeah.
When it comes to prioritizing, like, whether it be myself or my studies or my future over that of my dad's, which is so, so, so messed up to think about. But I feel like I, again, with the young carer responsibility, like role, I didn't really come to terms with the fact that I was a young carer until I realized I had to start reorganizing my priorities in life.
Yeah.
Whereas before, you know, your priorities are probably your studies, your friends, you know, you spend time with your friends after school and it's really fun and you're living that young life. And like, again, I wasn't very much of a social person anyway, so it was pretty okay for me. But yeah. A while there when my dad was first getting diagnosed, and then suddenly that was the first change. I had to prioritize him over my studies. That was at my HSC, mind you. So it was a really weird sort of situation where I was at school and everyone was so stressed over the HSC and studying like 4 hours a day and doing this and doing that and having extra sessions. And I was just there like, you know, I don't really care about my studies at this point because my dad is dying, you know? That was the first change that I really could put my mind to. And then after that, it was a kind of process of starting to neglect my friends. And like, I started shutting people out because my priorities changed. My priority was at home, and I was to care for my family and to care for my dad first and foremost. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it is a balance, I think. And I feel like that's a main issue for a lot of young carers, having to balance at home, their life at home, and then their life at school, at uni, at work, their future, their own social life, their own mental health. It's a very, very big balancing act that I'm only just starting to really get at the moment.
And it's especially hard if you talk to someone about it and they don't understand what you're talking about. Even though I understand how they don't understand, because, you know, unless you've been in that situation, it's really hard to understand what's happening there, why your priorities change that much and so quickly. What about the other people in your family though? I mean, your sister, she's an artist,
She's working full-time at a high school down the road, and so but it is different because she has a full-time job and you know, she doesn't have to do any studies now. She's completely in her adult life, but she's still living at home, and so she goes to work in the morning, she comes home in the afternoon, and then she can take care of dad for the rest of the evening, in addition to doing all of her marking and preparing lessons and all that. It's really just because I'm on holidays right now from uni, so I am at home more. But when it comes to
more flexible there, but and your mom is also still working full-time,
so she's a shift worker. So for her, it's even harder than for any of us, because not only is she like a nurse, and so she can take care of my dad in a capacity that no one else can, but she has to go to work at like 1 p.m., come home at 2 a.m., and then sleep in until the next day, until like 12, so that she can do it all again.
Yeah.
And so she really has no time other than weekends to spend with my dad and to spend with us. So with all of our responsibilities outside of home, it really is a balancing act then to taking turns, I guess, like taking turns for someone to be home with him and make sure that he's okay. But I think that in the future, there's a potential for my mom to like cut down her shifts so that she can spend all time at home. But even then, like, there is a bit of guilt.
Your dad's needs will not become less, but more. And you know that. So obviously there has to be some sort of flexibility.
I think we're looking into getting a carer to come in as well.
Yeah.
Because it's starting to get to that point where, you know, like you said, his needs are only increasing as time goes on. So
what kind of support do you have at the moment? Who is your support network?
For me personally or for like my family?
All of you, where do you get help? Is he connected to an MND clinic or to MND New South Wales? Does he have an allied health team who looks after him?
So in terms of practical support, at the beginning of his diagnosis, I mentioned this to you before, we didn't have a very good experience at Liverpool's MND clinic. So we ended up going to Macquarie with Professor Rowe, and God bless that man, he was amazing. First session, we first meeting with him, we already got my dad on Riluzole, on that like life prolonging medication that he needed, but he wasn't getting before that. So we got him on trials, and that was honestly, Macquarie Clinic was such a big support, and that was really our first support as a family in terms of motor neuron disease. After that, we started getting familiar with MND New South Wales. And I didn't even know about Youth Hub until my dad forwarded me an email that he got about the design contest.
Okay.
So I didn't know about any of that. It's, I feel like a lot of it has to do with like knowledge, and my sister and I, we had no idea about the support that was going into, like the support that was available to us, or even the fundraisers that we could have gone to, but hey, it's never too late, I guess.
No, definitely not. Yeah. I mean, you did sign up now to the National Youth Hub.
Yes, I did.
And you told me before a little bit about what it means to you. So what are your expectations from that connection?
Yeah, well, originally, like I was mentioning earlier, like when you talk to people about being a carer and about having all these extra responsibilities that suddenly rearrange your whole life, no one really gets it. And it's a very, like, I don't want to seem like I'm complaining. I don't want to seem like, you know, it's just, it's something that you can't really talk about with people, or at least I can't. Like, I've never spoken to a lot of my friends about this or about the like nuances of it. So having like a youth hub where you can connect with other young carers and you can talk with them about all of the mess that comes with being in this situation, it's such a good opportunity to relieve that sense of isolation that a lot of young people get in this situation, and a lot of just people suffering and like being affected by motor neuron disease in some way. It's quite a rare illness from my understanding, but even then there's a lot of people who are diagnosed with it in Australia, and having that connection with them is just so invaluable, like your own mental health and to coming to terms with this illness and to with this situation. So I think the Youth Hub is just going to be such a good avenue for me to really explore, I guess, this other part of my life, which I've never really explored with anyone. And just
That is also one of the aims of the Youth Hub, to really bring young carers together so that they can find someone who understands exactly what they're going through, right? And what their role is and what their difficulties are and what works and what doesn't, and to just support each other. It's a support network, definitely. And I asked you before if you'd heard of Carer Gateway or Carers New South Wales, and you said not really.
No.
So Carer Gateway is a national government program that offers all sorts of support to carers, also to young carers.
So young carers like yourself, for example, can apply for a tailored support package that could be, you know, something like a laptop if you're studying, or driving lessons because, you know, you may want to take your dad somewhere, or it could be respite or counseling, or even, you know, your family could also apply for, you know, someone who helps with shopping or cooking meals or whatever. So all of those things are there.
I will add information and a link and also phone number to our Youth Hub website. And if you're from another state and you call the general number, you will be connected to someone in your area who's looking after your area.
That's actually so interesting that you said that, you mentioned driving lessons, because like it really is such a small little things like that that make such a difference. I was worried about this the other day because, well, I don't think I'll ever be able to afford a car. I think because I'm a public transport girly, I need to get my license so I can drive my dad to appointments and all of that, but I can't afford to pay for driving lessons. And then my mum is busy and my dad might not be able to take me in the car. So like that, stuff like that would be so helpful to support. Like I never even knew that that existed prior to this. So
yeah, if you Google them, you know, you find all sorts of information, but a lot of people just don't know about it. So we'll put some extra info on the Youth Hub, definitely. I don't want to give the wrong information here on the podcast, but I think it's about $3,000, but there's a yearly package available, and they are tailored. So some people need the driving lessons and other young people may need something else. If you are 12, you don't need the driving lessons, but maybe you need a laptop for school, you know? So things like that are there for young carers. And I think it's really, really important because, you know, there's a lot of unpaid care in across the world, actually. People care for their loved ones, also don't want to, right? You want to look after your dad, but at the same time, there are so many things that can make it easier for you. And that's why Carer Gateway is fantastic. Is there anything else that you want to tell me about what's good for young carers to hear, maybe?
I mean, I guess the main thing I'd like to kind of relay onto other young carers is that, like, just that It's so weird to say, but like for a long, long time, it felt like it was just such an isolating experience. Like I do not want to complain about taking care of my dad because I adore him, and taking care of him has often like I think it's in a way brought us closer, but I'm not going to credit that to MND. I'm going to credit that to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I guess it was just so isolating because, you know, like whether it be loss of social interaction or like suddenly my studies aren't that important and I don't think about the future as much because I'm scared of what that might hold for us. Like it's so isolating and it does take a big mental toll. And I guess that not only we're not alone, we do have other people who are in similar situations, but also really important not to be afraid to reach out for support, because that was something that I still haven't done and I still don't really do often. I don't reach out and I don't talk to other people because I don't want to burden them. But I think it's just so important for people, for young carers especially, to know that it's okay to feel the way that they do and to really just reach out. That's the most important thing. Hey, you need to be there for, whether it be like your parent or your grandparent, you need to be there for your family in this time. And the only way you can be there for them is if you support yourself as well. So you need to really prioritize yourself before you can prioritize other people.
That's very good advice, actually, for all carers, right? To be afraid to ask for help and to reach out to others, definitely, and to try and find support. And there's so much out there, different forms and different, coming from different directions, just to find it. So to be isolated as a carer is the worst thing that can happen, right? Because you need support and you need to look after yourself as well, because if you don't look after yourself, you can't look after others. We all know that, we've all heard that sentence, but a lot of times carers neglect themselves in looking after their loved one. Thank you for that one. I also wanted to say, because I just hadn't said it before, but you learned about your father's illness while you were doing your HSC, but you still had a fantastic result in your HSC. And how did that work? I was just sort of, how did you do that?
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny.
Just say you're brilliant. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you.
It's really good. So you could have studied anything you wanted with that result, right?
Yeah, well, thank you. But I genuinely have no idea how that worked. I mean, I did apply for educational access scheme, which really helped. Like I applied with my dad's condition, saying like, you know, I can't really concentrate in class right now, but I'm still trying my best. And I'd like that to be taken into consideration. But other than that, I feel like it actually did help in a way, because I feel like a lot of students in school especially tend to overstudy and they tend to get so stuck into this like brain of like study, 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 nothing else matters.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to take a step back and to not freak out as much about any of my studies because, you know, something much worse was happening in real life. So it was better for me to navigate my studies in a way that was like, look, I'll study if I can, but it's not really that important. And I did get early entry into my course, which actually alleviated a lot of the pressure. And then during the actual HSC, I had my best friend staying over and I was tutoring her rather than studying for myself. That actually helped. But hey, I'm here now. I got a great ATAR and I made it into my first choice. So that's really all that matters.
That's quite amazing. But yeah, I think it is true. You knew what was important and that was more important in your life. And therefore you did not overstudy. If you make that the only priority in your life, that the HSC, then you know that's sort of what creates all this anxiety that young students have. So you had your anxieties elsewhere.
It really does apply to everything as well. I think it just, this whole situation made me mature a lot faster than I would have otherwise. And I like going walking around life now, I really just, it's a lot easier to cope with difficult things. And to, it's like my family's been through a lot, even in these past 2 years. Like we had a lot of deaths in the family and then we got my dad's diagnosis. So it was not a fun time, but I was able to cope with it pretty okay, solely because I developed this outlook on life that was very much, there are things that are more important than this. I can, all I have to do is just stay with my family and like prioritize them, make sure that I have this very objective outlook on life and take each day as it comes, because you can't predict what's going to happen in the future, whether it be with my dad's condition or with my own, or I don't know, like you can't tell. So it's best to not worry.
Back at the beginning of what you said in the beginning, right? It's like, okay, whatever is happening and you just do your best. Yeah, I think you're doing an amazing job so far.
Thank you.
I always ask everyone in the end what is important for you to spend your time on. So if you think about your situation and your time and how you organize your time, what is important to you in your life at the moment? What would you say? What is the most important thing?
The most important thing, I'd say, is family, evidently. But I think myself also comes really high, because that's a thing. Like, if I take care of myself, that involves spending time with my family, taking care of my dad, taking care of that. But then also it involves actively making an effort to overcome my kind of like guilt about having my own life and go out and try hard with my studies, make sure I work really hard and try to succeed the best that I can in that. Then also having a bit of a social life. I guess it's like trying to, the most important thing to spend with the time I have left and with the time my dad has left and with the time with what we all have left. God, that was a mouthful. Is just to balance the things that are important. That's really it.
Yeah. What relaxes you?
Making art. That's really it. I mean, I enjoy cooking as well. I'm quite a creative person. And a lot of that actually ties into taking care of my dad. Like, I force him to sit down and have a bit of an art session with me. Yeah. Then I ask him for feedback and he decides to give me a lesson. And then also cooking. I really enjoy cooking for my family. Things like that. They're pastimes. They relax me. And then they're also good ways to take care of my own mental health and to take care of my family as well. Okay. So that's all very important parts of making sure that I remain sane and that everyone remains like happy and healthy.
Yeah. Lauren, sounds like you're on the right track. It sounds like you're doing a fantastic job there. And yeah, thank you so much for spending time with me this morning. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much. It really has been such an amazing opportunity.
MND New South Wales is funded largely by the generosity of community members, with only around 10 to 15% being received from government funding. If you'd like to donate, please go to www.mndnsw.org.au/donate or give MND New South Wales a call and one of our friendly staff will assist you. Check out our website for more information at www.mndnsw.org.au or call the MND New South Wales info line on 1800 777 175.